I am Patrick Yost, National President of Fraternal Order Police. This is the Blue View. As we approach Police Week, as thousands of Americans are planning to come to our nation's capital to show respect and honor to our fallen officers and support their surviving families, there's a lot of work goes into what we now know as Police Week. And the Fraternal Order Police hosts for 43 years the National Peace Officers Memorial Service, which Police Week is built around. This week we have two people that play a very big part in the planning of Police Week, a very big part of planning our memorial service. With us today is Glenda Lehman, who's the president of the National Auxiliary, who does an amazing job of helping coordinate this event. And then Matt Hagan, who's chairman of our National Memorial Committee, and his crew is responsible for the setup and what we now know is the location and the sights and sounds that exist for our National Peace Officers Memorial Service. So with that, let's start off with you, Glenda. Glenda, could you please tell our listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself?
Yes, my name is Glenda Lehman, and I am currently the National Fraternal Order of Police Auxiliary President. I've been affiliated with the FOP now for a little over 30 years. Got involved with that being a law enforcement spouse. So my husband was a law enforcement officer. He retired from one agency, took some time away, but continued to work actively in the FOP, and then went back into law enforcement for a period of time as well. So I spent the last 30 years working on the local, national, and across our state, just supporting law enforcement families, the law enforcement profession, and I've had the opportunity throughout the course of that time period to also be a part of different areas with the National Memorial Service that takes place each year during Police Week. And I've been able to be a volunteer myself and then also be on the committee several years, and now actually being, as the National President, working with both the Auxiliary, the FOP Committee, and then also collaborating with the other organizations that participate in Police Week.
And we also have Matt Hagan. Matt is chairman of our memorial committee and responsible for the site location and all of the planning that exists at the location itself at the United States Capitol. Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I've been a member of the Fraternal Order Police for about 25 years. I served on my local lodge board, started off as the vice president, worked my way up to president, and then was on my state board. I was a sergeant-at-arms. Vice President, and then I served, I believe it was 12 years as the state president of Minnesota. And I've been a law enforcement officer, worked for the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office in Minneapolis, worked all throughout the agency, and I'm currently a sergeant in our patrol division.
I've always said that the precision that the auxiliary and the effort they put into the coordination of this event just completely just blows me away. And just to put it in perspective, you know, there are, you know, thousands of survivors. They're all assigned to a person. They're all in a specific location, point in our program. They put on a bus in a specific location. They come out, they sit in a specific chair. They come up and print and pin a flower at a specific time, and they're presented a medal that's engraved with their loved one's name. And that is done with thousands of people every year. The work that you put into it and work that that the auxiliary puts into it, it just completely blows my mind. And I can't thank you enough. We could not have the memorial service that we've had. For 43 years, we've done just that. We've, you know, shown honor to our fallen families and giving support and some meaning to the families. But I'd like to go back a little bit. Really, planning for Police Week starts on May 15th of the previous year, doesn't it?
So actually, there's a period of time, probably about 2 months of each year, where there's an overlap. And so we have some of our committee members that are actually working on two different services at the same time. We generally start the process of reviewing officers' names for the following year, the next year, if you will, in March of each year. And so we have a group on the committee that are already beginning the process of planning for 2025, while our core group are focusing on finalizing and all of the logistics around planning for the service that's coming up in the current year. So there's always that overlap between the two in order to make sure that both are being looked at.
Well, Matt, there's a lot of moving parts that make what we now know is Police Week, and more importantly, you know, for us, the National Fraternal Order of Police Memorial Service that occurs on May 15th. And just to, you know, as a side note, is an interesting thing, you know. May 15th is recognized as Peace Officers Memorial Day, signed by a proclamation by President Kennedy. But the interesting thing is it's actually our birthday as well. Fraternal Order of Police was formed, you know, founded, and actually first meeting occurred on May 14th in 1915. And on May 15th, the mayor recognized, Mayor of Pittsburgh recognized the Fraternal Order of Police. So that is really our day of authorization. You know, that we became an association. So in a lot of ways, it's also our birthday, and it shows the role that the Fraternal Order of Police played in putting together what we now know has evolved into Police Week. So tell us a little bit about your committee and the work that you do at the Capitol in preparation of our memorial service.
We've got a committee of, what are we up to now, 10 people that I'm in charge of leading. And then we work very closely with the Fraternal Order Police Auxiliary, the memorial committee from their side. So our committee's kind of broken down into a couple different subcommittees. So we're able to kind of be more efficient and be able to do all the planning and execute the service on the 15th. We've got a group that kind of handles all the credentialing and all the, you know, all the background information on everybody gathering for VIP seating, all those participating in the service. And we've also got our kind of group that does everything at the site. They're in charge of all the setup, all the teardown, but they're the ones that do a lot of the kind of groundwork and grunt work, as you would say, getting the whole site set up, organized the way it needs to be, so we can hold the service and so it's safe for all those that attend the service. Ruben Richlar, who is kind of the site chairman, he does a phenomenal job. He's been doing it for 15 years now, and he knows exactly what needs to go into that site to make sure the service works. He's been working with all our partner agencies for years, and he is kind of the go-to guy when it comes to that. He's just a wealth of knowledge, and he's got great relationships that he's built with all the people that work around the Capitol and all of our partner agencies. Then we've also got a group that works directly with the auxiliary for getting our survivors to the service. They work on loading the buses, getting the buses unloaded, just some of these big tasks to get everything done to make sure the service happens. And then there's also a large group of volunteers that come to the service every year that come to volunteer and help out. The service would not be possible with all these volunteers from across the country that come and help and make the service possible. Without them, we've got a great committee, but we just don't have enough people to be able to handle all the tasks that are associated with the memorial service on the 15th. You got to look at, you're holding a service, an event that has, you know, 25 to 30,000 people in attendance. That can't be done by just a couple people or a group of 10 or 12 people. It's got to be a small army, like you said, to be able to handle an event that size, especially with the challenges that we face with the location. Washington, D.C. is not an easy place to hold an event. There's a lot of red tape that we need to get through. And without the committee and the volunteers that we have, that would not be possible.
And there's a lot of planning that goes in. There's a lot of steps here. And I think most people, they show up and they see the service and they say, this is really nice, a lot of, you know, really nice fitting tribute. But it is a labor of love for a lot of people that you know, occupies a whole lot of time. And so if you could just walk us through the whole planning process, you know, just from okay, we know we've got it. They know the names, the whole process with the names, how they come to be, all of it, how it all comes together and the role that that the auxiliary plays in that coordination.
Sure. So the auxiliary in and of itself, our core committee, we have 8 individuals that we consider our core committee, and they also have some subcommittees. So there's probably about an additional 10 people that throughout the course of the year have responsibilities associated with planning the overall logistics of the service and making sure that all the pieces are looked at and in place. But the first group that are on the names committee, we have a seat on the names committee. So each of the names that come before the committee to be considered for review to be participating in the memorial service and or the candlelight vigil, they sit on that. And as those names are being reviewed and the list is being compiled monthly, so as we begin to build the roll call, if you will, those names are being added on there. And then communication is starting with those families and those agencies as that process takes place. So over the course of the year, our roll call is created. At the end of the calendar year, when we do the what's considered our final names meeting, it closes out the roll call for that particular service. What then builds from that is a number of different things. That roll call then is confirmed with all of the families of each one of the fallen officers with their agencies. And that starts to build out a number of different things. We start then looking at hotels that are going to be a part of Concerns of Police Survivors Conference for that week. So that's where they typically all of our participating or first year survivors will be housed. That's important because that then rolls into the auxiliary and the FOP determining logistics around ensuring that as we're looking for May 15th, that we have the buses available and scheduled accordingly because we're moving anywhere, depending on the year and the number of officers that we're honoring, anywhere from 2,000 to maybe 6,000 family members, coworkers, and friends at different points during the same time period from those hotels either to the Capitol or those hotels to the host hotel, then to the Capitol. So there's a lot of planning in that coordination and logistics about making sure that we have volunteers, we have our committees, we have the survivors all being moved at the right time, at the right point, whether it's from hotel to the Capitol, hotel to the Capitol, Capitol to the memorial wall, and then back to the hotels, and ensuring that they're all there at the time that the service kicks off and are in their seats. It's most important to make sure that those logistics hit the exact mark so that when that service starts and an officer's name is read, that that family is actually walking for their officer. And kind of putting it in perspective, this year with registration so far, there's just a little under 4,000 survivors that have registered for this year's service. And registration was extended through this week. So we're anticipating that to be ending probably between 4,500 and 4,700 survivors that we'll be planning for during this police week. And so for us, it's ensuring that we're available during registration. So we're there on the days that those survivors are coming in to make sure that we have them all identified as participating in the service, that they've received the credentials that they're going to need to be able to have access to the service, that we're aware of who's coming, and so that we can make sure that the tribute portraits that are given out to the families are presented to them, that we have their transportation ready on the 15th, that we are coordinating with them, the escort officer that is coming in that will be escorting them on May for the 15th, that we have those individuals identified, matched up with the family. We've got transportation coordinated for all of them. So it really is a lot of moving parts, and it's important that we coordinate with not only among our committee and with the FOP committee, but also with the other organizations. Takes a lot of volunteers. So we have that core group, yes, that are dedicated and have a passion to make sure that all the logistics and the large plan comes together and is done. But the volunteers that we have, just from an auxiliary standpoint alone, we typically have 75 to 100 volunteers that come into Police Week every year just to support the pieces of it that we're coordinating and putting together. Those are the people that do a lot of the critical work once we get there to make this event take place and to make sure that it happens, and that it happens giving the actual honor and the remembrance that we want it to have. And without them, we just couldn't do it.
There's no question. I get questions of people about, you know, being part of the committee and all. So the reality is we couldn't afford to put on the memorial service we do if we did not have, like you said, 75 to 100 every year consistent people that have just made it part of their just their annual event to give back and be part of that that army of I call them army of honor, soldiers of honor that make this this service what it is. You mentioned the other organizations, and it's certainly worth doing it. People come to DC, they're really a cornerstone of really three main organizations that have some key roles. The first one is obviously COPS. COPS is bringing in Concerns of Police Survivors, is bringing in the survivors. It's a number of workshops that are taking place for them. Good programs to help surviving families and help them recognize that they're not alone and share their experience with others that are going through the same exact thing. There's so much value in all of that. We couldn't do this without COPS, could we?
No, we couldn't. We partner with them to ensure that we're not only putting together a service to honor the fallen, but also to be there and be supportive to the surviving families and friends. And so their ability to be able to bring those survivors in and be able to offer them the programs that they offer them so that they have the support that they need during the week, but also support that they can pull from for them even when they leave police week is really important. And we partner with the COPS staff on doing orientations and briefings to the survivors while we're there. It's kind of to give them an idea of what to expect during the week, but also what to expect on May 15th. Police week in and of itself is emotional, right? The reasons that people are there is very emotional. And then you're adding all of these different emotions and things as you come through the week. So it's really important to partner together, be able to give that information to the survivors so that they know what to expect. And it helps them get through the week. There are support services that come in from the COPS organization, but the FOP also has support services that come in. And we want to make sure that they know that we have those services available for the survivors, but we also have it available for the staff of each of the organizations and the committee members and the volunteers as well. So that as you go throughout the week, at any point in time that anyone needs that support, there are people available.
Yeah. And of course, the third part of this is as well as the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, who hosts the Candlelight Vigil 2 days before. So the 13th the cornerstone of those events, COPS is helping bring everyone in through federal grants and all of these, the things that they do to help the surviving families. The Memorial Fund is doing a Candlelight Vigil, and then ours is really the cornerstone. It's the thing that anchors in a police week where every survivor plays a physical role. Surviving families play a physical role in our memorial services, very touching and, kind of a good way to culminate a week of honor of so many organizations here that what's now become Police Week.
Yeah. And we partner with the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund as well with at the end of our service, when the wreaths are actually taken from the Capitol grounds to the wall and are actually posted there. And then so we kind of hand them off, if you will, to them, where the honor guards then stand guard until midnight that night. And then they're moved actually to the survivor hotel. So we kind of partner with them on that process as well.
Yeah. It's just the site itself. United States Capitol, there's a lot of protocols, a lot of security. And more often than not, the leader of the free world is a keynote speaker. A lot of dignitaries are present. And so it's logistically, it's just the management of that amount of people in the Capitol itself creates challenges, doesn't it?
There's a lot of challenges, like you said, associated with all the dignitaries and those that are in attendance. Holding it at the U.S. Capitol, especially with all the fallout from January 6th, obviously U.S. Capitol Police is the host agency for the event. Their security protocols changed a little bit, so we've obviously had to alter some of the way we do some of our things. But for us, we plan that the President of the United States is going to be there. So whether he's there or not, we still have the same security plan in place. One that's done partly because that's what Capitol Police requires, but for us, it's also easier to be able to plan and have the service instead of trying to scale things back. We just keep the keep everything the way we've had it in the past when the president's there. And then that way we know what the protocol is going forward. Everybody that's all the partner agencies that we work with, Secret Service, U.S. Border Patrol, D.C. Metropolitan Police, along with White House staff, they all know what their protocol is and what they need to do. So that makes it a lot easier for us. All of our members of our committee know what the kind of security concerns are going forward with the service. So we get everybody on the same page, and it runs very smooth that way. And we've had a great working relationship with, Capitol Police and Secret Service and all these agencies. We've been doing it for so long that a lot of it for us is kind of second nature because we're so used to doing it that way.
Yeah. Well, Matt, in just a few days, we're going to a week, short period of time, we are going to be coming to the Capitol for the memorial service. And we've got a lot of visitors that are coming, and we've got some security protocols that can be in place. So as our members show up at the Capitol on May 15th, can you kind of walk them through of what time the gates open, what they can expect, what they should or shouldn't do, and how they can help us facilitate the movement of that many people in a short period of time?
First and foremost, we want to make sure that we have a successful event. We want everybody to be able to be there and be safe and be able to honor our fallen. When they arrive, they need to arrive from 3rd Street, and they can enter either at Pennsylvania or Maryland Avenue. That's where the gates will be. Everybody entering will need to go through screening, whether it's going to be Capitol Police or Secret Service. We don't know that yet. That'll depend on who our guest is for the service. Any law enforcement, the gates open at 8:30. So the grounds will be open at 8:30. Before that, they'll be able to be let in, but they'll just have to wait in line at the magnetometers. Once they open, they'll get screened. They'll be able to have access to the grounds. Law enforcement officers need to have, if they're in uniform, need to have two forms of government ID. One of those being their law enforcement credentials from their agency. If they do not have those, they will be turned away and not be allowed into the Capitol grounds. That's not our rule. That's U.S. Capitol Police's rule. The other issue is if you are a retired officer, whether you're a plainclothes or in uniform, you cannot carry your firearm. H.R. 218 does not cover you on U.S. Capitol grounds. So please just leave your gun at home. There's going to be plenty of other officers that will be at the service to keep you safe, so you don't need to worry about that. So if you do bring it, you'll be turned away and you will not be allowed in. Those are kind of the two big things. We'll have signage directing people where to go, along with volunteers kind of directing people where to go if they need to check in for VIP seating, or if they're participating as Honor Guard members, they'll receive emails or text alerts for all those officers, telling them where to go and where they need to be. The service will start at noon. We're hoping it'll run about 2.5 hours. It's all going to depend on how long it takes us to get through the names. We have 100 or 222 names that we're going to be reading this year. 222 officers are going to be honored this year at our service. So we're hoping to get through those so that the service doesn't drag on, but we also want to make sure that we honor those brothers and sisters in a proper way. The other thing that I would really ask is to make sure that you stay till the conclusion of the service. In years past, we've seen once the keynote speaker has been done speaking, or the actual service portion where all the speakers are done and we start reading names, we see a mass exodus of people leaving. Please stay. That's all I can ask. I know a lot of people say, well, it's hot, standing in the sun and standing there for 4 or 5 hours. Well, I look at that, that's pretty small sacrifice to make to honor our fallen brothers and sisters. We need to be there to support them. We need to be there to support their fallen or their family members that are attending the service.
Those that are right now, they're packing their bags and getting ready and making plans to be here for Police Week. What do they need to know from the auxiliary standpoint? And Matt's explained what they need to know when they enter the site, but they are, those that are coming to the hotel. Tell me, is there some planning things advice that you can give that those that are planning and what they can expect?
I think really some of the things to think about is that when you come into DC, obviously the first thing we always tell people is weather is unpredictable, so you don't know what it's going to be. And so it's planning for any and all types of weather. I think some of the other important things is always to remember, especially if they have medical situations, to make sure that you're thinking for and planning that. There's long days, whether it's attending the conferences, whether it's going from one event to the other, and especially on the 15th, is that it's a very long day. So keep in mind making sure you've got medicines that you may need, if there's any special dietary things that have to be taken into consideration, to make sure that you plan for that as well. Know, though, that there's also different support things that are available. We have the daycare site at the day of the 15th on site at the hotels. We also have things set up for very similar to that. But it's ensuring that you're packing for that. I think more than anything is just knowing that when you come in, that there's enough support services around, whether it's through COPS, whether it's the FOP, whether it's through the auxiliary, that will rally together to make sure that they have what they need when they get there. But as far as planning for the 15th, it's recognizing that weather can be cold, it can be hot. Dress in layers, because those can easily be added on to stay warm or come off to if the temperatures are hot. It happens rain or shine, so plan for that as well. I think one of the most important things that we always tell people is that it's on the lawn of the Capitol. We're going to be walking on grass, and depending on what weather has been leading into the 15th, the ground can be very soft, so comfortable shoes are really important. Yes. And recognizing that most days are going to be long days, and it's okay while you're there during the week if you need to take a few moments and check out, if you will, to yourself, whether that means taking some time to go back to your hotel room, finding a place at any of those things, just to have those few moments by yourself. So, and that's all okay. And recognizing that it's okay to be able to do that.
Oh, Glenda, your entire team, Glenda, Matt, and your entire committees, all of the volunteers are just absolutely amazing, awesome, and we can't thank them enough for the hard work and dedication and sacrifice that they all give to make this a memorial service and a fitting tribute that our fallen deserves and have earned. So, thank you very much. And to our viewers and listeners back home, look forward to seeing you at Police Week. But I appreciate you tuning in to the Blue View Podcast, where we talk about the issues that are so vitally important to the men and women who suit up and show up every single day and make a difference in the lives of those we serve. Thank you.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. To get the latest from the National FOP, make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at GLFOP and on Instagram at FOP National. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.